citizens of America.
The so-called Western Forces of Texas and California
have suffered a very great defeat at the hands of the United States military.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
We're moving to D.C. today.
We need to go down there.
They shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol. Every instinct in me says this is death.
Blood it.
Every time I survived the war zone, I thought I was sending a warning home. Don't do this. But here we are.
There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you?
Da, 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 da!
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy!
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
Welcome back to the main feed, Mam Fam. We're welcoming back to the show this week after an absence. Brian Gill.
What's up?
Welcome back,
What's
Brian.
Up? What's up? Thanks for letting me back in. Hopefully everybody saw my statement and my public apology for what I said in the previous episode. Look, all I can do is I'm just a man, you know. I'm just one guy. I've never claimed to be perfect. I consider myself a man of faith, and there's a deep fly ball by Castellanos. It's 4-0 Phillies, and I'll try to be better. That's all I can do. Is try to be better. You know, I am bummed I missed it. I really wanted to see Monkey Man. I just little inside baseball. My wife and I are in the middle of a move and work stuff. Very stressful too. So I can make the recording time work. I could not find a time where I could go see the movie, unfortunately, but I plan to at some point here in the not too distant future, because it looked fun. I was excited about it. Just didn't get to do it. So
yeah, it's honestly weird to be taking a week off of monkey related films, but that's what we're doing this week.
Yeah.
But we'll be back to monkey talk soon.
Right. They couldn't have worked a monkey into Civil War. I feel like that was right there. Like it was very possible. Yeah.
Good to have you back in the fold as we dive in to one of the many big releases of 2024. Alex Garland and A24 bring us Civil War. And it's the movie that, I guess, knocked off Godzilla X Kong, the new empire, from the top. Mm. So A24 has to be happy about, being number one at the box office is never a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But my theater was pretty packed. And I actually had to cancel our first screening because something came up. We had to get one later in the day. And I was worried I wasn't going to get this in before the recording. Mm-hmm. So what was your experience like?
Worst theater experience of the year for me.
Wow.
There was a gentleman sitting about
protester.
It wasn't a packed theater. Yeah. Well, I will cop to, I'm not somebody who really suffers from anxiety or any of that kind of stuff. Generally speaking, had a little anxiety with this one. This is an uncomfy movie, and it made me a little uncomfortable in the theater too. If I'm being honest, I probably came in with a little bit of that vibe, but there's a guy. I went on an afternoon. It wasn't a packed theater. There were plenty of people there, but there was space. The guy who was closest to me was, two or three seats over, was an older guy, and he was talking to himself, which infuriates me, obviously, as a normal person. And so I kind of let it go through the trailers, and then I started giving them the stink eye or the side eye or whatever. And I had to shush a grown man, Kent. I had to tell probably a 7-year-old man, shh, like you would talk to a little child in a first grade classroom or something. I was so frustrated. And then the next time he talked, I sat up and had to say, "Hey dude." And at that point he stopped talking, but that sucked. But much worse than that was I found this to be quite a disturbing movie. And there was a 3-year-old in the row in front of me.
Oh.
So that was one of my least favorite.
Well, Brian, in today's world, you got to teach them young.
I guess so.
You can't hold it back, man.
I'm just like watching. And look, I mean, a lot of the disturbing parts of this movie are its themes, which are obviously going to go over the heads of a three-year-old. There's no world where a three-year-old needed to see this movie in a theater opening weekend. And so it did not help. It did not help my... my grade on this is going to be pretty good, I think, but like it was not a fun experience, personally. I did not enjoy.
that's a bummer.
Yeah.
It's always a bummer.
I don't have that too frequently. That's not a... That hasn't been... I know a lot of people have really bad theater experiences frequently. That's not typically the case for me. I fully acknowledge part of that is that I usually am able to kind of pick my spots and go when there is at times where there's, you know, less likely to be a huge crowd of people and all that kind of stuff. But it sucked. It was not fun times, but you had a packed theater. That's good. That's fun.
We did have a packed theater. I'm with you with the amount of movies that we see. I could probably count on one hand the amount of, like, I remember it was a bad experience times, which you would think there'd be more, you know.
Yeah,
you'd think it'd be like at least half the time I'd be having to tell somebody to shut up. But it's honestly impressive.
It is the thing I miss most about Alamo is just knowing, yes, I'm paying probably more than double what I would otherwise, but I also know that they're going to take it seriously if someone's being a douche and is is causing issues. Yeah, as frequently as we go to the theater, it is surprising that we don't get it more often. I will say I am definitely I'm willing to have a confrontation, so that I don't know if that helps or hurts the cause, but I'm pretty quick to be like, hey, shut up, or whatever. Yeah. If the situation. So someday you may hear that I died in the theater because I confronted the wrong person. But
Here's what I've done.
Not above.
I've done the same thing, and you're right. You can usually tell during the trailers. Like, there's usually some chatter going on. You're like, okay, this is not looking good, and I've pulled the just straight moving away from somebody, like not tell them to shush. I'll just go find another chair that's not near you, so I don't have to listen to you and not confront you. And it works for everybody.
Yeah, right.
So try that.
No, I will do that at times too. That was my brain was working on the, all right, am I going to shush this old man, or am I going to just get up and give him the stink eye and make a passive aggressive comment about how it's sad that adults can't figure out how to behave in public. But I went with the shushing. I went with the shushing. So for whatever reason, that felt more demeaning in some ways to just shush like an old dude, older dude. Hey, I don't know. Like it worked. It worked. He was mostly quiet for the rest of the movie. So.
And the other thing is that you experienced, and I've experienced it as well, is the parent who has to go on opening weekend. Maybe can't get a sitter this weekend. Well, we have to go see this. No, you don't. You really don't.
It was a dad too. It was just like one guy with this kid. And I want to preserve, like, what is right for me as a parent is different than what's right. There are some objective things, but a lot of parenting and what works and what doesn't work, what's good, what isn't good, whatever is subjective.
Mom, we saw Kung Fu Panda morning.
But like, there are some things where you just want to be like, hey, this is not okay. Like, this is not an appropriate thing for you to be doing for everyone involved here. Like, she does not need to be here, and we do not need to experience this movie with every 3 minutes her being like, asking him if she can go home or is happening. I mean, like, it was a disturbing experience, Frank. Honestly, it was not great. I mean,
Of all the movies for this to happen in, I'm glad it's this one. It's kind of indicative of the entire
It's
what, like, we got going on here, you know.
Yeah, this is how the Civil War starts. Actually,
yes,
this child having to see the movie.
Yeah, two different sides. they're both trying to see the new Garland joint, and and one guy is just way too loud with his popcorn, and that's the straw. That was the Franz Ferdinand moment for the Civil War of America.
Exactly.
I can see it happening, honestly.
We can tell our kids this is how it happens.
We've gotten upset about dumber things in life and in this country. Well, glad to have you back. Richard will be joining us here momentarily. He's running a little bit behind this evening. Let's discuss our thoughts on Alex Garland, the year of our Lord, 2024, Brian. When's the last time you visited his material? Do you visit it often? Where do you stand on Garland?
Here's where I say, I really did mean to watch Devs before we saw this movie, because I that was a show that I watched three or four episodes on and just never kept up with, despite thinking it was very good. Garland is somebody who I still believe is capable of, if not likely to, of making a masterpiece movie, because I do like... I like that he's a challenging filmmaker. He's audacious. He has a lot of ambition with what he tries to do. He doesn't pull punches. I don't know that I really like any of his movies. I think Ex Machina is closest I am before this movie to something that I really liked. And I know some people will be listening to this and be like, that is a masterpiece, and that's great. I'm glad that it doesn't quite hit for me the way that it does for others in the way that I want it to, honestly. And I probably need to go back and revisit that one at some point in the in the future. But every movie that he's been involved with to this point, possibly with the exception of 28 Days Later, which he wrote and is just a pretty, pretty great movie. Almost everything else that he's done, I would say I like a lot of the elements, but I ultimately don't really connect with the movie on the level that I feel like I should and that I want to. And so it ultimately becomes a frustrating experience. I hated Men. I was one of the worst. I don't remember if it actually made my bottom 10 last year or 2 years ago, or it was just outside that, but I viscerally did not like that movie. And I also felt like that was the first time where his sort of theming and his ideas, he always, I think, kind of has a point. He has symbol. He has things that he's trying to get you to make you see in sort of the subtext of his movies. And most of the time, and this is similar, this is how I felt with this movie, actually. A lot of the time, if you can leave those things in the subtext without bringing them heavily to the forefront, they can work brilliantly. It can work really, really well. And Men was the first one where I was like, not only did I feel like this wasn't a very good movie, also I freaking get it, dude. Like, it was beating me over the head. It was like being in like sophomore English class where you read a book and you're like, oh yeah, I kind of liked that. And your English teacher is like, well, literally every single part of it is a simile is an allegory for something else. And you're just like, okay, well, this is symbolism. You know, just like, I freaking get it. It's a whip to deal with. And so I was kind of on the outs with him for this. I thought the trailer for this looked terrible. Somebody on Twitter, I wish I could credit them, called it Left Behind for Libs. And I could not get that out of my head every time the trailer played. So I was not super anticipating this, despite the fact that I really want to enjoy the Alex Garland experience. And I just have not gotten to that point yet, but you do, you're a fan, generally speaking, you enjoy what he does. And I'm jealous of that, frankly.
Yeah, you're right. I would say more often than not, I'm a fan of what he's doing. You're right. I think Men was a little misguided, maybe a little deaf to the moment on what he was trying to say and do, and that's fine. You can't win them all in this business. Mm-hmm. I'm of the opinion that, you know, when he's trying to say something about society at large that's not related to technology, I'm kind of out. He goes very Adam McKay-ish. It seems like the serious version of Adam McKay sometimes. But if it's science fiction, if it's Dread or Sunshine or Ex Machina or Annihilation or Devs even, I'm in. And I think it's some of the best science fiction stuff of the past, 20 years probably.
Sure.
Which how he kind of views those worlds, and the subtext in that and the satire is still there. It's just not like beating you over the head the entire time with it, which I tend to enjoy. You get kind of get lost in the world, and there's also some themes going on too. So I appreciate that. But Richard joins us now. Richard, catch us up on your Alex Garland opinion in 2024.
This is one where you and I really agree. I enjoy him much more in the realm of sci-fi. That's not to say it has to be dumb sci-fi or sci-fi without things to say. I think just whatever his sort of, however his allegorical brain works, I think works best in that medium. And also, he's a very stylized filmmaker. I don't know if he's a great writer, but you know, he's become quite a good, I think, visual filmmaker and gets pretty cool performances out of people. And I think that probably works in terms of his style best with science fiction, but wasn't a huge men person. It just seemed like he was something he really wanted to say something with it, but kind of got lost in his own in the, like all the different angles. It was like a Russillo rant, Brian, of a movie. But so yeah, I have a complicated. I do get excited for his movies to some extent because Ex Machina was really cool and all that. But I'm always kind of reminded why am I excited for this? I don't know. But the A24 piece of this is like a A24 kind of blockbuster got me excited. I'm with you, Brian. The trailer was like, this looks but then you start hearing, oh, this isn't actually an overtly political movie, right? In terms of, you know, big R and big D kind of stuff. It's like, I was kind of excited and at least intrigued coming into it because it's someone working on that kind of scale, a studio working on that kind of scale with a movie that may or may not have something to say. And on which I was something that kind of piqued me going in. And it also was not like released in the fall when you would think like, oh man, they're really going for it. This is like A24's attempt to just like make a big action epic. Sure. So I was definitely curious in that for sure.
Yeah, it had the marketing. It felt like they were going for a Roland Emmerich kind of vibe of trying to make people think this is going to be on that level, the scale of it and all of that. So I thought this would make more money than it did, honestly, because I don't think people know or care about the A24 at large. They see this and they're like, oh, you know, I think people probably understand that this is going to be really divisive with its theming and stuff. And maybe just aren't primed for that. Maybe they want to have a little more fun. So we'll go see kaiju fighting giant monsters instead, you know, that kind of thing.
Also, I think like Kirsten Dunst, through all of her credits over the last 15 years, has done some really cool stuff. Though I don't think I wouldn't say box office draw in 2024. So that's a little different too.
For sure.
But the press was interesting on this because I've never seen something kind of so aware of the climate. I mean, I did not see much of this press, but everything I saw literally, and it was probably 10 total minutes of stuff. It was a different dunce on different shows or people talking about this on different web clips or anything. And it was always like, this isn't about the current state of American politics. It's just a big, dumb action movie kind of operating in the world where a civil war has happened. But it's just an excuse to have a fun action movie in the future. I thought that was really interesting because it was definitely the kind of film equivalent of, you know, Republicans Buy Sneakers too, or something like that. But it was so overt. And so like, this is not a comment on the division in our country whatsoever, which definitely to its credit and fault, I think whatever, 3 years ago, that would not have been how the movie was marketed at all. But I do think that, and then, it did nothing. I can't imagine it's been released internationally yet. Cause it's only made like 350K internationally. So either foreigners really don't care about this, or it will still have a international box office, which would be interesting to see with this. But yeah, domestically, people seemed like this is either going to be some politically divisive film or some big dumb action movie. But if I'm going to do that, I want Mark Wahlberg in that, not Kirsten Dunst. So I'm just not going to go see this. It seemed kind of confused by that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. You know, again, I think maybe they had another star attached and couldn't get him and ended up going with Wagner Moura instead, you know, maybe Wagner Moura is not bringing in the crowd they thought that he was going to, you know, there's probably a lot of reasons. I'm actually surprised. And as we dive into the specifics here, I'm surprised at the restraint from Garland, because he kind of sets you into this world, but there's no real, like, let's stop down and talk about why all this is happening and what we could have done to avoid. There's literally none of that at all. The United States gets to this place and Garland drops you into it for 2 hours, and what happens happens, but there's no real super long exposition. It's not overtly political, even though it's set in a divided America. Does that make sense? Which I found pretty interesting, because I thought this was going to be real preachy and I didn't find it. So I just found it more kind of like a dystopian sci-fi thing than like he's trying to be super, say a lot of really deep stuff. It felt kind of like a war documentary movie in a dystopian America.
Yeah, I was definitely anticipating it to be either overtly political in a kind of obnoxious way, or to be like so centrist as to also be obnoxious. You know, it's like, no, we're trying not to make a political statement. So in doing so, we make it very obnoxious and it's in that level of things. And it wasn't. So that part, I really appreciate it. I thought it did a very good job of navigating that. And to your point, Kent, like making it feel a little more sci-fi than I think I probably expected going in. With that said, it's not fun. I mean, it's good, but it's like it's not a good time. Like my wife really liked Handmaid's Tale. Lindsay's not super online. She's not quite as probably to her benefit. She's not she doesn't see as much chaos as I do, because I tend to fill my brain with news and Twitter and just like paying attention to everything that's going on and all that. Anyway, I watched one episode of Handmaid's Tale and I was like, nope, can't do this. This feels like one step away from reality, and I don't want to be in that. This has a similar quality, but it is presented in a little less politically inclined way, which I think makes for a still a really visceral, uncomfortable experience, but also is smart to have some sci-fi elements. So the overtly political stuff was the side where I felt like, the part where I felt like I was going to get pretty eye-rolling and frustrated with this. And instead it was more of the combination of sort of a Sorkin-y kind of dialogue. And when I say that, I don't mean the speed with which people talk, which is what we normally mean when we talk about Sorkin, but it's like the sort of self-serving journalism side of Sorkin that gets annoying at times. Like there's like these little asides within dialogue that just felt like it was like cut from an unseen season of The Newsroom or whatever. And Oh, you started your career with The Massacre of Antifa, like that kind of stuff. I was like, oh my God. Okay. It's like this, when you're trying to cut so close to reality, that becomes kind of cringy, especially in dialogue, to me at least. Like, and it's not a ton, it's not like every line of dialogue or anything like that, but there were enough of those little moments where I was like, oh God, okay. And I just kind of cringe on that side of thing. And I feel like that stuff could have been avoided relatively easily, especially given how little subtext or like political, how little origin we're given as to what's going on here, or who the president is, and blah, all this kind of stuff. And then the other part of this that was very Sorkin-y to me was right at the beginning when Kirsten Dunst pulls Callie Spaney out of, you know, this altercation, and Callie Spaney immediately recognizes her and is like, oh, you're famous photojournalist, Lee, or whatever. And I was like, nope, that's never happened in the history of the world. That has never happened. It just felt like a little cringy to me on some of those elements. And I'll take that over what I expected were going to be the cringy parts of it. I'll take that. But they also at the same time feel like kind of easy to navigate around.
Yeah.
And we just chose not to instead. But maybe that's nitpicky. I don't know. Overall, I'm going to give this a good grade, and I'm impressed with a lot of what was done here. There were some things that felt like it didn't fall into the traps that I thought it was going to fall into. And then there were some other little things that popped up and were like, really? We did that? That's kind of a weird choice.
Yeah. The big moments, like the reason you go see this movie are the big moments you see in the trailer. I thought it lived up to those moments. And mm-hmm. and then some, even though it gives some away in the trailer, like I thought the ones that they highlighted in the trailer were even better in the actual movie. So, you know, maybe this is not a movie he wanted you to leave talking about the cast, talking about, oh, the performance is great. He wanted you to leave talking about the visceral nature of what you just saw and experienced and how on the edge of your seat you were. And I got that, man. It was uncomfortable. The energy of the packed theater was palpable. I mean, you could hear a pin drop a lot of times. It was like he wanted to show you what war really looks like, mm-hmm. but set in America, where it's like, okay, mm-hmm. we know this stuff happens overseas, but unless you're going on a super deep dive down the internet, you're not going to see people getting shot or bodies stacked up or anything like that, right? And he's showing it to you like, nope, here it is, here's what it looks like. And that's the statement to me of this movie that he was trying to make, is like, here's war, it's awful, it's terrible, hopefully we don't get to this point. I don't want to get into spoiler talk yet, because I can, but what did you think about Civil War, Richard, in general thoughts?
I thought it was a really impeccably made action movie. I thought sound was awesome, like you said, Kent. Some of the cinematography was really, you know, not crazy showy, but just like, it was like, oh, you know, something different than like a Roland Emmerich movie. There's like a
I liked how it was movie. This, not wide format, but this full screen format. I mean, mm-hmm. the screen was huge. It felt like it was all, you know, not the super wide cutoff letterboxed cinematic, whatever. I mean, I loved the choice for him to shoot it like he did. It felt so full framed and big and epic. It felt like an IMAX movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. And I thought Dunst was really good in this. I thought some really cool performances from actors I had seen and not seen before. So there's a lot I really like about the making of this movie. I just don't think the script was that interesting doesn't have to be interesting in any kind of political way, but just kind of cinematically, in terms of caring about the arcs of things, it didn't really get there for me. It wasn't awful. There were some cheesy moments. But this was, for me, like, man, I would like Garland more the director than the writer at this point. I kind of want him shooting other people's stuff. Just not that he's, like, atrocious.
Yeah, but he has some great stuff as a writer, though. That's where I'm conflicted on it. It's because I see this, and I'm like, yeah, this writing was crap. Then I watch Devs and I'm like, man, this is so well, like so perfectly envisioned. And so every line is like leads to the next one. I mean, I just think he needs to not have full control maybe or something. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
The last couple of movies, I just thought the scripts were really kind of either he needs to take 5 years off and write something, like maybe Devs just took a lot of his,
maybe that was his baby.
Yeah. It's just kind of a lot of his creative juice, and he needs to recharge that a bit. But yeah, I just think as a writer, this one's not as hack as some of the stuff was in Men and mm-hmm. Eye Rolling to that extent, but it just kind of seemed like, okay, this guy went to film school. Like, he's going to be a cool director. This is his first script. He wanted to shoot it. This shows promise. Like, this could be fine, but it's like his sixth movie. So it's like a little bit of a different scale, and he's such a great stylist and has made, you're right, written and made some really interesting stuff. This fell a little short of that, but it's not like abysmal, and it's a bummer that this didn't make a lot more money, because I hate that the lesson that this will teach Hollywood is to make these movies whatever. But again, I think it's, to me, and what's funny is Dunst is awesome in this, and I really like her. To me, she's, you know, guy who has movie podcasts on internet, one of my favorite stars. But I just think the most people, if you're gonna market this as, hey, this isn't like super smart, super opinionated, super voiced political movie. This is just a big, dumb action movie that takes place in a civil war. If you're going to market around that, I think there's like 25 movie stars you need to have in that one of 25, preferably two of 25. To, if you want this to then make 100 million. And I just don't think she has that, which is no criticism, like way worse actors than her have that, but it's just a different thing.
I thought this is a very, like, all of the leads were great. Like, this is a, you know, basically four actors in this movie, and it was all four of them I thought were carried and were awesome. But absolutely agree with your point, Richard. It's like, if A24 is cool with not making a ton of money on that, that's fine. Great. Cause I mean, you know, more power to you on that. But it is interesting. It felt like a movie that was marketed as sort of a smart science fiction. Again, I hated the trailer, but that was mostly a tone.
Oh, I thought the trailer was great. I thought
I hated it.
The Jesse Plemons line from the trailer, I thought it was perfect.
Yeah,
I just, all of that were the things where I was like, oh no, I'm nervous about how this is going to play out. But yeah, to your point, Richard, it's I don't think it's a big dumb action movie. I think it sort of straddles the line between that and something that is more of like an artsy A24-ish kind of a movie. Yeah, if the intention here was to look, it finished number one. It's what, the first A24 movie to do so. So it's a success on that front for sure. It cost $50 million to make. It'll probably, and it looks really incredible for $50 million, by the way. It'll end up doing probably making a little bit of money on that, but it's an interesting where the business intersects with the art is something we talk about a lot on this show, and it's a very interesting case in the case of this movie. It's an interesting spot.
Yeah,
because I love Kirsten Dunst and I think she's fantastic in this. But yeah, Richard, you're absolutely right. It's, I don't know that you don't have a movie star and you don't have really even a B team movie star in this thing. So if you're expecting it to pull well overseas, it's I think it's probably unlikely. But
this reeks of that's full creative control from
Alex Garland. Because it's not something that, I don't mean to cut you off, Kate, but something that Garland has done really well at times, and for me personally has kind of gone overboard at times, is his style, which we talked about a little bit right before Richard came on. It's not an overly stylized movie either. And so, yeah, it kind of adds to the, I don't even know if confusion is the right word, but it has a little bit of dabbling in like trying to be all things to all people in a way. And I don't know. I don't even really mean that as a criticism. I just mean it's an interesting take on what they're doing here, given everything involved. It's just, it was, in some ways was exactly what I expected, in some ways not what I expected, and I don't know exactly how that's going to play out as far as the numbers go.
Yeah. Yeah, I just meant in terms of the casting. A lot of these people he's worked with in the recent past and seems to just be like, let me get my people I enjoy working with together and make this movie. And A24 seems to let him do that. And speaking of that, the Jesse Plemons role that's come out in the last few days, Kirsten said the actor dropped out and she was like, oh, just call Jesse to do it. And he came up there and did it. Pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a power couple that I would like to hang out with.
Yes. They're very high on the beers with celebs list. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesse or Kirsten or both. That'd be great. He can pop up in something. He's got a very Seymour Hoffman quality these days.
Oh, big time.
Where he can pop up and either creep you out or mystify you or be hilarious if he wants. I don't know. I mean, this guy,
right?
He's got a very unique
thing. Did you read that Texas Monthly profile of him by chance?
I haven't read it yet. I'm going on a road trip this weekend and I'm unpacking it to read on the road.
Yeah, you'll love it.
Because I super love that guy and I'm love Texas Monthly. So,
and I love it's so, because like as people that do podcasts, I can say one of the great casualties of podcasts is the profile piece. Like celebrities don't really do them anymore because they'll just go on Smartless instead or something, right?
For sure.
And so I miss the like actual kind of narrative built scene set profile piece a lot. My favorite thing to read. So it's cool to read whenever I come across one. There was that one and this one's dumb. The Scandoval guy had a really good one in New York Times magazine about life after that whole big Vanderpump scandal last year. It was like a really it was a really great profile. I recommend both. It was like, oh man, these used to just be in every magazine every month. That was awesome.
Right. Right.
Well, he was awesome in this. And like I said, it's probably there for a day or two. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced Offerman was there for one day. You see this trailer and I thought there was going to be multiple scenes with the president and, oh, we're going to get a Congress scene of them arguing about how we put a stop to this war and he's going to have to create bipartisan agreement and all, you know, I just pictured that. And he's in the opening scene where he's just giving, practicing a speech, I think. And then he pops up via audio on the radio a few times. And then, spoiler alert, he's just in the end and that's it. And just very briefly. So I was like, I saw him on CBS Sunday Morning doing press for this and they were at his house and they were like, what does this role mean to you? And who did you base this on? And what is, you know, political climate type questions. And I just saw this movie and I laughed because he was there for probably a day and a half. And Garland was like, okay, you're the president. That's all you need to know. Deliver these lines. And he's being thrown into this. It's pretty, he's handling it. I mean, obviously like Nick Offerman would. His greatness. But
I did think that was a place that, that, you know, kudos to Garland, handled very well. Like I was ready for Offerman to be like such an obnoxiously obvious Trumpian figure that I was just going to, I mean, you know, I'm glad that he was in the movie for two scenes. I think that the more you put him in there, the more you, you probably lean towards, you just start to roll your eyes, even if you're on that, on the other side of it. You know, I thought that took a lot of, I don't know if subtlety is Garland's strength, but that was at least downplayed in a way that I felt like fit the movie really well and helped its overall goal.
We need Steve McKinley Henderson to pop up in everything too.
Man. Yeah, he
makes,
he's awesome.
Makes everything better. Love that guy. He's great in this. Man, there's two things I wanted to talk about. Two scenes. One's kind of spoilery, but the other is not. So let's go non-spoilers first. It was the sniper scene where they drive up to the house and I guess it was kind of a carnival or Christmas carnival or something, right?
Yeah.
Man, great sequence.
That was awesome. That. Great scene. And it really gave you a lot, like some depth on both sides of like what everybody's going, like them talking to the soldiers there was a cool, was a really cool scene. Some of the better dialogue in the movie, I think too.
Yeah, 100%. It was great. Shout out Jin Ha from Devs as well, popped up there too as one of the snipers. But we're just shooting at them because they're shooting at us. I mean, it says a lot right there. Loved that simple delivery. And the last scene is what this is all leading to, which is the White House bombardment. It was awesome. Loved that. I mean, the way that that played out. I mean, you're right. This looks like it was way more expensive than $50 million.
Doing stuff in close quarters like that is smart because you can choreograph it really well and do it pretty inexpensively as opposed to a siege, you know, of DC or whatever. You know, you get those shots as you're coming in and then really the rest of it is sort of confined to one street section, one block, and then right in front of the White House. And then, you know, smart choice. I'm sure he used a good chunk of his budget on those scenes, you know, to start to set everything up, but then to have the ultimate confrontation be something that, that happens, like I said, in close quarters is smart. And I think it worked really well since we are in spoilers. I got to say, I absolutely hated the Kirsten Dunst death at the end, or I guess death, or sort of left a little bit ambiguous, slightly, just because it was set up for a long time to where you're like, okay, I know what's coming here at this point. But also because I hate, and there's a little bit in this movie besides just this, but this was the one that stuck out the most. I hate when a movie relies on the characters to do the dumbest thing possible in order for the scene to take place.
For real, like redemption, for her, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, look, for her to jump out in front of the kid and knock her down, okay, get it. That makes sense for what we know about that character at that point, and like you mentioned, the redemption. but she literally just stands in the hallway. She just stands there to get shot. I just can't, I don't know. Like, we could, surely we could figure out a way for that to be a little bit better. We don't need her to do the dumbest thing possible when she's proven to be hit by a ricochet or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, it's, I don't know. That's a pet peeve of mine in a lot of movies. It's one of the reasons why I don't like a lot of horror movies, because I feel like a lot of horror movies rely on, how about if this person is a complete idiot all the time?
Yeah.
And that kind of drives me crazy. Just a sort of left a bad taste in my mouth for, despite the majority of that scene, I think is pretty great and really well shot.
Yeah, I completely agree. A couple of quick things before we hit grades here. Let's talk about the Jesse Plemons scene. It arrives at a time in the movie where everybody's kind of still alive and you're wondering how has this happened. And so in my opinion, I was like, oh, somebody's going to die here. Who's it going to be? And the way that that happens is pretty jarring. Murdering friends right in front of them, throwing them in the pit. Mm-hmm. That was not only a very intimidating sequence from Jesse as an acting standpoint, but just from a suspense direction standpoint, it was very well done.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. A great sequence.
And my only real complaint with this movie, this is my only legit, actually, I'm complaining about this. I don't care what the photos look like, Alex. Every time it would flash to Jesse in the middle of a war scene, taking a photo, and then would show the photo. I don't care. Show him at the end. Show him in like a photo book at some point, you know? Like, it would just stop down these moments with, oh, but here's what the photo looked like. And it kept going. It wasn't just in one scene. I thought that was a poor decision from him. What difference did it make what the photo looked like? I mean, there's one moment in the movie where she sees the photo. She's like, oh, that's a really good photo, Jesse. That's all you need. That's all you needed there. You did not need to see this girl grow as a photographer.
It's a lot better in photography, guys.
Don't care. The photos were fine. It's not even like they're worth stopping down for.
Let's be honest. That's what made me laugh too, yeah. You are not Amy Adams, or Eddie Adams, rather.
Ansel.
Yeah, or Amy Adams, yeah.
That actually, I was like, okay, I would not have done it this way. And if I would have done it this way in my mind, I'll say, oh, this is going to be really cool. I would have watched it and be like, okay, this is really slowing down everything. I've got to cut this. Mm-hmm. That's what I would have thought. Yeah. But
under 2 hours, though, so that helps.
Very true.
Nice bonus. Yeah.
Very true. I told my wife as we left this, she really enjoyed this, by the way. This was one of her favorites of the year. I thought it should be longer. Didn't it kind of end abruptly? I felt like I had another 20 minutes in me of it was leading to something, another 20 minutes, but yeah.
I'm glad it ended where it did, but it seems like something that would have been 20 minutes longer, whether it needed to be or not, I would say.
Yeah. I'm just talking about the energy I felt in the story. I was like, it's fully in that moment, and it just kind of, Offerman dies and it's over, you know? Or, yeah, Kirsten dies as well, too, like you said, but yeah, then it's kind of it.
I guess.
But, yeah.
I like the Gaddafi-esque pose with the president's corpse at the end, though. So that picture gets developed.
Yeah.
You know, really hammer it home.
Didn't even think about sparing him either. They just, boom.
Yeah, summary execution style.
Yeah.
So I was saying.
Well, any final thoughts, notes before we hit grades, fellas, on any of this?
I'm with Brian on the thing of I'm relieved this wasn't a disaster, because the trailer looked like, for me at least, it just seemed really bad. So I am excited this was just okay. Big win.
I'm a little bummed that I saw some M-word masterpiece being used after the premiere of this, and I'm in the Garland camp, and I didn't think this was even close to his best work. So
there's certain directors that if they put out a movie, there's a certain group that's going to, it's going to be the greatest thing that's ever been created. It's the greatest piece of art that's ever been created every time before. Really, you've decided that probably before you see the movie even, and then you got to, like, you've already taken your stance. So you got to double down on it. You know, we're likely to see that, later in the year with Joker. And that, you know, Garland's not in the the same, certainly not in the same level of like Snyder or some of these, like the fanboys just are, it's like a requirement in order to stay in the club. But yeah, there was, I think this is quite good, and I'm going to give it a very good grade, but I, you know, I'm going to see 20 better movies this year, probably. Well, I don't know. 2024 looks like it's going to suck, so maybe not, but yeah. This probably wouldn't touch my top 20 or 25 from last year. Let's put it that way.
What my last thing was, really cool score music in this. Mm-hmm. He always
good needle drops too, for yeah. the most part. The Sturgill one was awesome.
Yes.
I like that a lot.
And he always has really cool either needle drops, you know, soundtrack songs or mm-hmm. unconventional mm-hmm. scores that are really interesting mm-hmm. and fun.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he's got a great ear.
He
for
picked
it.
Good. I would, this was a, something I enjoyed too, that the Sturgill one sticks out as the big example of this, but he, there were a couple other sequences where he did a more stylized, a sort of like an Alex Garland-y kind of scene, and highlighted by a really interesting or great needle drop. And that was cool. I like the combination. It's like, okay guys, give me 3 minutes to get this out of my system. And now we're back to the
oh, he had the some of the real
very
joyful music
well
with like showing war
sequence.
Footage with real joyful music kind of thing going yeah. on a little bit yeah, yeah. too. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It's like, okay, let me do that. Let me cook here for a second and uh-huh. then we'll get you back to some of these other, and I liked that. I thought that was I think I like that probably better than some of the other sequences over his previous films, the way that it's kind of over stylized at times. I liked this sort of reserved version of him, I think, better than some of the other ones.
Yes. I agree. All right, let's hit a grade here. I'll go first. I'm in between an A- and a B+. I'm like an 89. Something like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'll go B+. What about you, Brian?
You know, I came in saying A, and then I feel like I talked myself down a little bit. I'll give a soft A, like one of those that's like a 94 that might yeah. come down to a 90, 92 or 91 by the end of the year. But yeah, given what I was expecting, this is a huge triumph for me personally, because I was expecting that I was kind of going to hate this. So, you know, that's a major win for Alex Garland, who I know it will be very happy when he sees my review. So, yeah. By the way, 53. He's 53 years old.
Yeah,
he's been doing it a while. I still think of him as like a young up and coming director, and that is super not the case.
Yeah. So,
anyway, A, I'll just go straight A for me. Richard, what about you?
B- for me, a little lower than you guys. But yeah, so a lot better than I thought it would be. So I was pleasantly surprised. Perfectly good March movie. Love. We don't get very many B- anymore. Everything either is terrible or is good and comes out. So it's nice. Sometimes things just being kind of good is, it's like nostalgic.
All right. Let's hit a quick weekly recommend before we get out of here.
Weekly recommends.
All right. What you got for us this week, Richard?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend something actually Brian recommended a few months back, but piggybacking on it, and that's the Devil's Candy book.
Oh, nice.
Really good. Great really book, enjoyed man. It. Love those kind of movies. I can't wait for you to read the Apocalypse Now one with all the good Coppola stuff in it. You're going to love that. Definitely get to that
nice.
When you can before yeah. Before Megapolis or whatever. But yeah, really cool Hollywood book. That's a really interesting that just, it had so much about the like reception of the book in New York. Mm-hmm. Which I read that book last year. That was like my big novel of last year. And so it was kind of cool. It was still fresh in my mind. So I really enjoyed all that. But the production is pretty wild. And yeah, really, really enjoyed the book. So thanks for the recommend. I did not know that existed.
Same. That's free on Audible too. If you're if you're an Audible subscriber, it's in their catalog. And it is in depth as all. I mean, it's crazy the access that she got for that. It was awesome.
That's awesome. That's actually perfect segue to my recommend, which is Eleanor Coppola passed away, I think last week, the wife mm-hmm. of Francis Ford Coppola. And so I wanted to mm-hmm. recommend Hearts of Darkness, mm-hmm. the doc she did about Apocalypse Now. It's
nice.
almost as good of a movie as Apocalypse Now, just the making of that. And she was there filming it the entire time for a documentary she knew she was going to make. And I think in 91, they ended up putting it out. So check it out. Really good.
That's
and,
a big, big R.I.P. part of the book, too, is the making of that whole story of the production of that long after the movie. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I watched it because she had passed, and we're also talking about the conversation in the VIP this week. Another mm-hmm. Coppola movie. So wanted to get a little more context on Coppola back in those days. So make sure you check out the VIP if you're into Coppola talk as we look ahead to Megalopolis this year and 50 years of the conversation. But Hearts of Darkness, worth checking out for any movie fan. Even if you haven't seen Apocalypse Now, you can totally see this and it's great. So check it out. Go ahead, Brian.
Nice. I'm going to recommend an album that came out probably a month ago that I just got to, and it's Casey Musgraves, Deeper Well. I really dig it. It's good. Awesome. I'm a terrible movie critic, or excuse me, also a movie critic, but also especially a music critic. But I always love when Casey puts out an album. This one's really interesting. Do you remember, you had a great descriptor of what the sound is on this album, but I can't totally remember.
Oh, yeah. I tried to guess the sound of the album by just looking at the album artwork, and I think we were pretty dead on. I said it sounds like Golden Hour 2, you know?
Sounds like I like Golden Hour better than this, but yeah, it does feel like a sequel to Golden Hour. It's like very, very chill and melodic, and has some, I don't know if it has a hit. I've listened to it through it like three or four times, and I'm not sure it has
I think it has like a pop hit.
Yeah, but regardless, that sometimes those are the better albums. So
sure.
I always love Casey when she puts out an album, and I've listened to this one several times over the last week or two. It's very chill, very mellow. I like it. So Deeper Well, Casey Musgraves.
Man, I don't know if you have SiriusXM, but if you do, you should listen to the Howard Stern interview she did. It's like 2 hours. It's greatness. She's awesome.
She's awesome. I love her.
Yeah, check that out.
I wish I could be, within 500 feet of her, but
sure.
Some point that court order will expire. So it's good.
Well, there you go. There's some weekly recommends for you and some Civil War talk. Hope you enjoyed it. But join us for the conversation around the conversation as we dive into the VIP here right after this. So until next week. Till next time, we'll see you at the cinema.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ah-yah, the salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.